Welcome to... No, that's stupid. I'm here with Cal Warner, aka Schematist. Thank you for coming on Press Start to Continue.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's really cool to talk to you because sometimes I get to talk to nerdcore artists and or like composers, but I've never talked to someone that does like a concept album like this before. So I was super excited about it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a really great thing. Before we get started, I do want to make sure to say the album is called Anna Real, and it is I can't remember the actual description. It's basically describing a woman's journey surviving child abuse. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. That's right.
So if anybody's listening and that might be a trigger point for you, I just want to let you know that the interview is going to go from now until the end of the show. So if talking about child abuse or the feelings or the situation surrounding that isn't really something that you want to go into, thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. can you tell me where you got Schematist from?
Yeah, that's a funny one. Like, so at one point in time, I think I didn't really have a musician name. I just had like this YouTube account that everyone kind of generically has. It's like Crimson Azure something something. It had nothing to do with my music at all. But then I thought about it for a while. I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to make this a brand. I want to make this a thing. And I want to have something that kind of captures my personality. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to relate to who I am as like an individual and relate to my habits. So Schematist came from the word scheming or a schemer. Like back then, and I still am even today, I was a huge fan of fighting games. Mm-hmm. And in fighting games in particular, I always tended to like play a really low tier character, someone who's just not as good as the rest of the cast, but I would work. And the only reason why I would win is because I would like really outplay and like kind of think way ahead in advance of what the other person wanted to do. So even though I had to work extra hard, I still had gotten these victories quite a bit. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go with Schematist. It's the approach I take to everything. I always try to have some kind of plan. I'm always scheming something before I go in to do something. It could be a negative thing as well, because I always try to have like the solutions mapped out, and then when something doesn't go right, I get super anxious and frustrated. I'm like, oh, what do I do now? But that's basically where it came from. Just like the idea of scheming an idea or like hatching a plan.
my friends would have nothing, would not know anything about any of that. I don't plan anything out at all. I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. So so that's really cool. So when did you start using that name? Like how long ago did you start really getting into making music and trying to build that brand?
I think it really was about 5 years at this point. It's like maybe even a little bit less than that, but it gets really muddy because I've been playing the piano for a while. I've been playing the piano for about 10 years. And I remember when I was really interested in starting to build my own tracks, I was using Sibelius at the time. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really good at that program because I didn't really understand writing music with notation. It was something that I never learned how to do it. So I just completely shoved that away. And then I ended up with something called Anvil Studio, which was freeware, and it wasn't the best program, but it was still getting me comfortable with writing. And then I finally went to Reason, because everyone was using Reason at the time. And then, I don't know, I felt like it was too complicated. And then next thing you know, I heard of FL Studio, and then that's where I stood. And I think that was really the five-year window, because once I got FL Studio, I stuck with it, and I got really, really serious. At first, it was like kind of like a joke, and then over time, I was just like, wait a minute, this program is actually really good. It was beginner-friendly, the interface was nice, it wasn't too intimidating, and I just stuck with it. And then out of nowhere, one guy asked me, how much do I charge? And I didn't even put out my business like that in order to make money. but someone assumed that I did, and I realized at that point that I really have to take this a little step further.
That's really, and, so someone just came up to you like, can I give you money?
Yeah, it was like, I had a bunch of tracks up there, and he's like, hey, I'm making an RPG, like, how much do you charge? And I was like, oh, okay, I gotta do this now. So that's that story. And then at that point, it's been definitely 5 years, yeah.
So someone that was making a game and they wanted you to do the soundtrack?
Yeah.
What game was that?
Oh man, so this is the horror story. I mean, it didn't get finished, but I think it happens a lot, and it truthfully does happen a lot. Mm. But it wasn't. It was called. Oh boy. Oh man. The End of the Fallacy, and it was an RPG Maker game. And we had like a large cast of people on it. We had like two other composers besides me. We had one of the voice actors from what was the name of that show? It's, you know, Dragon Ball Z Abridged series.
Yes.
Yeah. we had one of the voice actors from there on the game, and honestly, yeah, it was going well. I even still today at this moment don't know exactly what caused the project to stop. Mm. I don't know what it really was. I think it was an internal dispute, because I heard from some other people in the group that, like, hey, I don't know how I felt about this, and I don't know how I felt about that. But then out of nowhere, it was like, you know what? We're not doing this anymore.
Wow.
And so all the tracks that I had written for that are still stored on my hard drive collecting dust.
and it's for that game, so you can't really, like, just release them on their own or anything like that.
Oh no, they're gonna get released.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. They're gonna get released.
Oh yeah, no.
I'm not gonna. I'll probably, you know, just have them there for like. Truthfully, what I was thinking of doing was just having them available for free for any kind of like content creators. Like if someone just wanted to make a quick RPG game or wanted to get experience with it and they wanted more of a sound palette, I was gonna just put them out there for free download. But I'm just trying to work out the logistics of that. I just want to make sure that it's actually a good idea.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get, like, you know, screwed over by some kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm about that. Like, I don't want it to go to waste. And I think that some people might like it, you know?
Probably.
Yeah. Why not?
Hey. People seem to like other stuff that you do. So, you know, it'd be weird if that was just the random thing, like, that just brought you down.
Yeah,
I should have released that. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. So, you have done a bunch of other projects. Just looking at your Bandcamp, which is Schematis. So that's schematist.bandcamp.com. On your Bandcamp, I see VG Remix Level 1, Neon Arcade, Submarine Wars. Can you describe Submarine Wars? Like,
oh man, that takes me to a dark history.
Uh-oh.
Well,
it just seems like an interesting name, honestly. So what was going on there?
It was a game for the Ouya. Do you remember the Ouya?
Oh my god.
I don't think anyone talks about that anymore.
No, nobody talks about that anymore. that's gone the way of the Phantom. Jesus.
Yeah, it's just really sad because I wanted to have faith in it. It just didn't really do its thing.
Yeah, me too.
And so, you know, putting it bluntly, the game was basically never played by anyone ever. And then I actually lost contact with the developers of the game. I forget what happened specifically, but we just kind of went separate ways. It was a very awkward disbanding.
Mm.
And again, I didn't want those tracks to go to waste, so I just put them up there. I'm like, you know what? Look, no one's going to play this, but you can at least listen to it, and maybe you might appreciate it, maybe you won't. It's okay, but for my own, like, sanity, I was so tired of that happening, where, like, I'll work on the soundtrack, and then it's just, like, nothing. Just nothing. But it happens a lot.
Yeah.
You have to get used to that, for sure.
It's, as with all creative projects, like, something goes wrong, or someone... one of the people gets like a new job or something like that. They have to move or something, or something random. So yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate if you work on something so hard and you're not able to release it. Has that ever happened other than that first weird project? Has that ever happened to you? Like, you have like this full soundtrack, it's all ready to go, but then you're just not able to release it for whatever reason. Has that happened to you before?
Other than that one, not as bad. There have been, I mean, yes, it's happened again, but the soundtracks weren't as big, maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 tracks or something like that. And that's okay, I think. I think that's decent. But when I have like, you know, 15, 20 tracks, that's a blow to the heart, right? Yeah. It's like, oh my goodness, yeah, it's so much time that went into that. So many months of work, and it's like, oh, just kidding.
We don't need it. Whatever.
Right. It's something you can do about it.
So you said I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just thinking, like, that's actually funny because, like, you know, I'll get to that later, but I'm gonna let you go first.
Okay.
Okay. I was thinking of like a tangent story at that point.
That's cool. Well, I was going to say you said that you started off with playing piano. Was that your first instrument?
No, my first instrument was the clarinet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I played the clarinet in middle school. I thought I was good at it. I felt like I was good at it. You know how we all are, right? As kids,
totally.
Like we, you know, and so what I tried to do was get one for my house because it was at school only. Mm. Like I was part of the band crew, and then I was like, Mom, Dad, I'm really good at this clarinet. I can read music at the time, and I was like really getting it. And they didn't believe me, of course, because they'd never heard me play. So they never got me the clarinet.
Oh.
And I went years and years and years without any like musical instrument. And then I asked for the piano one Christmas, and they were like, yeah, sure, why not?
So I guess they just had something against the clarinet.
I
There will be no woodwinds in this house, young man.
That's a good point. I honestly couldn't even tell you what it was, but they were very okay with a Casio keyboard, and I think it probably was because I could plug headphones into it.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so that was that.
Just thinking, like, one of them had a bad experience with an oboe. Just never got over it. There will be none of that. Anyway. So you started with the piano, but when did you make the transition into making game music?
It's kind of like a little bit of both. So when I got the piano, the first thing I started doing was learning video game music because that's when I felt I knew how to play, right? Because mm-hmm. if I could play a game song that I was familiar with already, I knew I was playing it right because I knew what the song sounded like. I knew the tempo of it. There was no way I was going to make a mistake, and I could hear the mistake if it happened. So I played a ton of video game stuff. And at the time, YouTube was becoming really big. So you could just Google, like, how to play Super Mario theme song, how to play Donkey Kong, how to play Zelda, and it was always there. And it would be, like, 20 videos on the same thing. And I just started writing down the notes, and I practiced for hours and hours and hours until it became a thing. But when it got to the point where I was like, wow, I want to start really, really writing music that people can hear in-game, that was a different transition, and that came way later. Maybe, like, I forget, maybe when I was in college about, when Street Fighter 2 Turbo came out and Overclock Remix did the soundtrack for it. That was the biggest, like, push for me, because that was the first time when I saw people not from Japan creating video game music, right? There are people from the Bronx, there are people from Philadelphia, from California. And I was thinking, wow, composers are everywhere. They're not just localized in Japan, where all my favorites are, but they're right here in my backyard. So I can definitely do this. And I think that's going to have happened sometime toward my senior year of college, I think, or my junior year of college. I was getting experience with it. But then it really took off after I graduated. After I graduated college, like when I was out into the job market and everything, I was really pushing it. And so I was freelancing while I was working a 9-to-5.
What were you, how were you pushing it? Like, were you just like emailing a bunch of game developers, or just putting free tracks like everywhere you could, or dropping your mixtape into McDonald's Happy Meals or something?
So, you know what? The marketing part is very hard, and I'm not going to like sugarcoat it. It's like super crazy because there's so much competition. Mm. Competition's ridiculous. So I made tutorial videos on YouTube to start building a presence on social media. And I honestly didn't push in aggressive ways. I tried that at first, like soliciting, like, hey, here's my portfolio. Do you want to work with me? That never worked for me. I think it worked once. And then every other time it didn't. Like, I literally started just talking to people, mostly via Twitter. And like, hey, I'm working on a soundtrack for this, da da da. If anyone needs music,
yeah,
feel free to hit me up. And sometimes people jump in and they just started messaging me in my private messages, and I was fine with that. So this way, it took pressure off of me. I didn't feel like I had to go chase anybody. And every time I did chase people, it just seemed like I was being that guy. Like I was being a little too pushy, right. A little too desperate. But if you were to just kind of calm back and just like work on your portfolio and just make a safety net for when people find you, they would want to work with you. That's what I was basically doing. So it was good for a while because I was getting a lot of hits out of nowhere. And I don't know why, but it was just happening. And I just didn't, say no to anybody. Whoever. He's like, that was the end of it.
That was just, yeah. Do you want, okay, cool. We're in. Cool. Let's do this. Before just, they can say no, basically.
Just like that. I was so big on just building a portfolio at that point. I was like, you know what? I want to start getting experience. And I had to make my mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I made a few of them. And it's okay. I made a couple of mistakes, right? Like accidentally breaking like agreements and stuff like that. I was like, oh, can't do that. You know, just things like sharing a song before the game comes out. Like I didn't know any better. I'm terrible at this. And then once you figure it out and once you have that happen and you get your, you know, you get your stripes, everything gets to a nice comfortable zone and then you're kind of smooth sailing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Other than before we go into the actual album, other than Anna Real, uh-huh. I keep Anna, doing that.
Yeah.
Can you talk about any other projects that you're working on, like any other games that you're working on right now, or has this taken up like the bulk of your time over the past recently?
I think Anna Real was a big project, but you know I'd never stop. I always like I'm kind of crazy, and I think it's because every time I finish a project, I feel like I need to start the next one right away. Mm. So I'm actually working on two games right now. I'm working on Last Line of Retreat, and I'm working on Fiction Sphere. And both games I love to death. They're very vastly different from one another. Fiction Sphere is more of a Mega Man-esque beat-em-up mm-hmm. slash shooter kind of a game. Very retro, very Super Nintendo feeling, with a little bit of more modern elements blended into it. And then Last Line of Retreat is way more retro, pixel based. The soundtrack is going to reflect that. It's going to be a lot of retro sounding instruments and really fast paced, bouncy stuff. And it's really simple premise. You just kind of like shoot your way down, and there's a lava coming from the top, and you've got to get to the bottom before it gets to you, and you just got to keep going, keep going. You get power ups along the way. Very fun, quick to play stuff.
Cool.
That's basically it for the game projects. As for like music projects, I think that the only thing I'm really working on is like growing my own podcast, like in a sense, like not like a big podcast, but I started a little series where I just talk about composing and like the horror stories, the fun stories, and the things that we all have questions about, mm-hmm. and just try to talk to the people who are like new to it or who maybe have some experience who are willing to share, just to build like more of a community where it's like a safe space basically. Mm. So no, like, you know, because I mean. Musicians do have an ego, and I think that sometimes it can be more dangerous than positive. And I just want to create a spot where the ego was gone. We were just like talking person to person, not trying to overshadow anybody. Mm. And I think that's important.
So where can people find that podcast?
Oh, it's on my YouTube page.
It's just on YouTube? Okay. Well, just so everybody knows, if you're listening to this on the radio or a podcast, that on the website when it goes up, all of these links will be on the page below this and on the show notes if you're listening on podcasts. So check them out, definitely. But what I really want to talk to you about is Anna Real. So this project is – could you explain it better than me? Like what is – because I'm going to like – it's a thing about a thing. And I'm,
so, well – So I guess background story to how it even like became a thing. Once I was getting into freelancing, there were a group of students in college who wanted me to write music for the game. And I'll never forget it because they didn't really have a lot of money, mm-hmm. but I knew I couldn't do it completely for free. So I gave it to them for a steal. I was like, hey, look, I'll write your music and all you have to do is pay me $7 per minute. Which is like unheard of. It's like completely unheard of. $7 per minute is like the biggest robbery fest you can think of. So they were like, oh my God, absolutely. And so I finished it, but the game never got made. I think one of the guys got really sick. Mm. And so what happened was he recommended me to someone else, who is Jessica Fong, who is the person I modeled the album after. And she was creating a game at the time, and it's still getting created, just under different creative eyes at the moment. And I had so much respect for her because I felt like that was the first time I was stepping into a really, really professional game development team. Mm. And I was seeing what went on, like, in front of the cameras and behind the cameras. I mean, you know how people tend to look at the success and not see what happens behind it?
Yeah.
Not see, like, the nights people are, like, pounding their head against the wall. And I saw all of that. And, like, that just gave me so much more respect. And she was very candid about her experiences. And it was just, it was completely inspirational. So I had to make Anna Real. So it was basically the story of, like, kind of a figurative life and death, like, or death to rebirth symbolism kind of a thing, right? So she's happy. And then she suffered what she went through with child abuse. And then now became a better person at the end of it instead of falling prey to it. And I wanted to do that in an audio storytelling form. So basically, Anna Real is just a project of melodic storytelling, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
a little
definitely.
Bit.
And I wanted to, let's hear one of the tracks. This is called Recovery, and it's featuring Carmen Lookshire. Can you tell me anything about this track?
Yeah, so First and foremost, Carmen is excellent. We went to the same college, and we were in the same group of friends, but we didn't really hang out all the time. I knew she was a musician, but we didn't really connect until maybe 4 years after graduation, which was excellent. I told her what this track was gonna be and what it symbolized. I didn't tell her what to say. I didn't tell her what to write. I just said, "Listen, Carmen, this is what I want this track to convey to all the listeners. What can you do with it?" And she knocked it out of the park.
Well, before, so Recovery. Before you go into that, let's actually listen to it before, so people can try to guess like what the track is about. So, this is Recovery by Schematis. It's from Anna Real.
Thank you. listening to Press Start to Continue.
That was Recovery by Schematis, who I'm talking to right now. And that is featuring Carmen Lookshire. And you, before you were saying that you told her what the track was going to be about and just to do her own thing. Just to write whatever came to mind, basically.
Right. Yeah, and like I was asking her like, what do you think about it? And she said that she wasn't a songwriter. And I honestly don't believe her after she finished Recovery. Seriously? I don't believe her at all. She definitely is, because Recovery was basically meant to symbolize and show the intimate thoughts of someone who's suffering from depression currently. And it was the second track on the album on purpose, because the first track, Fragments, really was to symbolize the happy moments of childhood, the happier times. Yeah. And then Recovery kind of jumps in to the darkest areas that are untouched, and Carmen killed it. Carmen was very, very on it, and I didn't coach her at all on any lyrics, but I think she felt the music and she felt which way it was going, and then she felt when it was sad and she felt when it was happy, and she just did an amazing job, and I feel like she needs to work with me again. Hint, hint, Carmen.
If you're listening, Carmen, you get with this guy.
Carmen.
So sure. Can you describe, like, so Recovery is about not just going through depression, but like trying to work your way through it.
Absolutely. And it's just like, I don't know, it felt right to me, because I know that it's, for example, like there are people that I talk to on a daily basis who suffer from depression. And I don't know, I don't want to put them, I'm not going to say their names or anything, but a lot of them feel like they can't talk about it. And I don't know why. You know what I mean? Because I think mental health is real, but they feel it's not exactly a safe zone. And maybe I understand. Maybe it could be fear of ostracism or something like that. Or maybe they feel like people might not be as supportive or understanding. And I wanted to kind of blow the lid off of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is real. And it happens, and it's something we should probably deal with.
Yeah, well, anybody, I mean, it's just on that, anybody that's listening that might be dealing with depression or might know someone with depression, one of the important things to remember is that it's for the most part, it's like an invisible illness. So you see someone limping, and you say, okay, they hurt themselves like in the past, and they have to deal with that. But you see someone that has depression, you don't see anything. So it's not a thing that is as accepted in let's say normal society. You know, so it's good to a track, especially a track like this or projects like this, it's really good to shine a light on that, just because a lot of people have depression and a lot of people have to deal with that. And it should be more okay, let's say, to talk about it. So anyway, soapbox. So that was Recovery, but how did the album get its name? I see that that's also the name of the last track, also featuring Carmen. The name Anareal, when I heard it, it didn't really seem to fit. Like, I didn't know how it went into the rest of the theme. So how did you come about that theme or that title?
So Anareal is actually not the name that I created. It's actually the artist's name. So Jessica Fong is the project lead, and she's also a freelance artist. Mm-hmm. So her tag is Anareal, and I asked her about it because I was curious too. It had like an interesting name to it. And she said that it actually came from when she was in high school. When people used to see her work and ask her about it, she would describe it as being anarealistic. And that's because at the time she didn't know that it was officially called stylistic realism. Mm-hmm. But she called it anarealistic, or it's anareal, which is like a fusion of anime and fantasy mixed with realism. And to me, that was pretty cool. But beyond that, it's like, you know, it's a couple of things. Like, when you animate something, you bring it to life. You take something that's fake and you make it have realistic qualities. So like having a heartbeat, basically.
Right.
So I wanted to kind of play on that. I'm like, you know what? This could definitely be it. So Anareal is really the self-actualization process. It's when you you take yourself from feeling down or completely at a loss or completely like removed, and then just coming into your own self and just realizing who you are, what you need to do, and just not caring about what other people say about you, and just being you, completely animated, brought to life.
Cool. That makes more sense then. So when you first did she approach you, or did you approach her about this, and how did, I'm sure she's clearly very open about what she's gone through in her life. So did she have the idea, or how did you approach her?
So this is actually the scary part. So yeah, she has been fairly open about it, and she has talked about it in vlogs and online articles and things of that nature. And I never wanted to share anything that she didn't already share herself, or things that I felt that she should talk about herself. But the dark side is, I honestly did not ask for permission, which I probably should have. But the good news is, she wasn't mad about it. She actually really was appreciative of it. She did like it. She thought it was a very, very kind thing to do. And I feel like it was a potential blow up, but I felt like I had to do it, right? Because of just like the amount of respect that I had, and I felt like my heart was there. It had to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm the kind of person that, like, I'm not really good at creating things for me, but I'm good at creating things for other people, or that are inspired by other people. Even when I first started composing, I would never really get ideas from within per se, but I would like cruise around on DeviantArt and I would look at people's work, and then I would get inspired to create something. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, in the in the 50s, basically, when it reminds me of pulp magazines. When like you had these compilations of sci-fi stuff, and what would happen is the artists would just have this, they would just make this picture of like a futuristic landscape, and they just give it to an author and be like, write something with that, because that's going to be the cover. And, instead of them writing and then putting art to it. So it makes complete sense. It's that's an interesting way of approaching it.
That's where I found myself, and I was hoping that she would have been okay with it, and I'm glad she was, because I felt like I put a lot of my energy into that.
Did you? did she find out like after you released it, or?
It was like, oh man!
Were you like all basically almost done with the?
Yes. You know what's hilarious? I was getting concept art done by Genzo Man, because I love his work, and
is that who did the album cover?
Yeah, and I was showing her the concepts like before we even got anywhere near finalized, and I was like, hey Jess, funny story, like out of these concepts, which one do you like? And like, you know, so I used the one that she picked, and like he finalized it, and at the end of the day it was just like, you know, oh my god, it was a complete twist, but it worked out. It worked out. I'm gonna say it worked out.
It's apparently it did, because she's not like, you're still talking to her.
Yeah, we talk all the time. Right? She didn't delete me on Facebook or anything like that.
Oh, that's always a good feeling. Not getting deleted on Facebook.
No one friended, you know?
well, there's another... I just can't.
I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. There's another track that we wanted to get to, Ghost Helix. Mm-hmm. So let's just listen to that now. We can talk about that after. This is Ghost Helix again by Schematist from Anareal. Thank you. Ghost Helix by Schematist from Anareal, and I am talking to Schematist, aka Cal. And thank you again for coming on the show. So can you tell me about Ghost Helix? Like, what in the journey of recovering from child abuse, where does that fit in?
Okay, so like, you know, so the whole album is like an autobiographical approach. So yeah, it's, I can't really go too far into detail, but over the time, you know, working with Jess on her project, she started opening up more and more about like her family dynamics. And so Ghost Helix is really just describing the relationship she has with her sister, which I thought was beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you have a sibling or not. I mean, I have two. I have a brother and a sister.
I do.
And they're both older than me. And I don't know, in some cases, like, and I hope this is the case, that you get along with your sibling, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't get along very well with my brother, right? I wish I did, but I don't. But I get along very well with my sister. So even though she's, like, very, like, critical of me and everything like that, we still love each other. It's very obvious. And I think Ghost Helix is really the track that's, like, highlighting the symbiotic kind of synergetic relationship that Jess has. Like, they have fights. I get it. Mm-hmm. But they love each other. And it's important to just make that distinction. Like, yeah, you can argue here and there. Things are not going to be well all the time. But at the end of the day, we're family. And, you know, I wanted to highlight that. And I did it with, like, very, very subtle instrumentation. Mm-hmm. It was kind of upbeat at some points just to show the higher frequency side of things, like the love. But then also it has got that little mellow tone coming in from the beginning to the middle.
Yeah. There is that duality that was really interesting, yeah. Like that undercurrent through the track, the hints of the metal, like you were saying.
And that's Ghost Helix in a nutshell. I mean, I don't know. I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you did. That would be weird if you didn't.
I hope that'd be a really terrible thing to do. Like,
I made this album. I hate it, but sucks. I'm gonna promote it. Like, and I'm gonna talk to all these people about it. But this one track, don't listen to it.
Partially, like, the reason for promoting it so heavily is because the proceeds will be going to the New York Center for Children in New York City, where they help children deal with anything from abuse to abandonment. And because Jess was frequently advocating for donations over there in California, I wanted to do something on the New York side. I feel like to do something a little bit more local and be a part of my community at the same time by contributing to a good cause. And that's basically what's going on with this album as well.
That's great. And like I said at the beginning, if you go to schematist.bandcamp.com, that's going to be linked below the show in the show notes, then there's going to be a link to that too, to that foundation. But Anareal is on Bandcamp. It's $5 and it goes to a great cause. So I think that's a good place to go out on. Do you have anything else that you'd like to talk about the album before we go into Sentinel?
I think, you know, I think it's pretty good. I think the last track, Anareal, really is just going to sum everything up, and it's going to, whoever is listening to it is going to hear where Jess is now. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, spoiler alert, she's in a very good place. She's just just founded her own studio at Lonely Egg Studio. And it's looking fantastic. So if anything, I'll see if I can give you that link as well, so you can include it there with it. Of course, no problem.
All right. So thanks so much for being on Press Start to Continue. This is we're talking about Anareal, which is a great it follows the journey of someone going through depression and dealing with the fact that of child abuse that happened earlier in their life, and it really does tell an audio tale or audio storytelling, as you said before.
Yeah, thanks.
So thanks a lot, and this is going to be the last song we're going to play is Sentinel, and that is again by Schematist. if you go to schematist.bandcamp.com, then you'll be able to see this and other music that I'm probably going to play on later shows, because it's great. So again, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me again. It was such a pleasure.
All right, and this is, like I said at the beginning, like I wanted to make sure that people, if they didn't want to listen to this, then they could have skipped this part. So this is the end of the show. Thanks a lot for everybody for listening, and talk to you next week.